Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inside College Hockey Inch Writers Podcast, NCAA Tournament Edition, a tradition of sorts that we would get the band together for a podcast on Selection Sunday. So with a little bit of delay, it is Selection Monday at the time of this recording, March 21, 2016. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, here with Mike Eidelbus. Hello, Bus.
Hello, Gladdy. It is a tradition unlike any other.
That is for sure. Kevin Zeese on the line. Hello, Kevin.
Howdy, Gladdy. I'm so mad Bus stole my line.
And batting cleanup, James Dowd. Hello, Dowd.
Definitely a tradition like none other, but it just ain't the same without the open music, is it?
Yeah, we that got lost in the move, right? Is that what we're
saying? Yeah.
So, well, we got a bracket, we got a tournament field, you know it by now, so we're not going to spend our time reading it to you, but we'll go through region by region and talk a little bit about things as they come up. I guess we'll go chronologically, which starts with the Cincinnati group. You've got a great game, maybe the best game of the first round, starts the TV binge that will be taking place in college hockey households across the country this weekend with Northeastern and North Dakota. And then the late semi in that group is Notre Dame and Michigan. Let's start with Northeastern. They've been the story of college hockey for me over the last half a year. And to come to where they are as Hockey East tournament champs, as playing themselves into the tournament field, and really on a staggering win streak and unbeaten streak that has really gone on since the start of the new year. Bus, you saw these guys recently in person. Tell us your thoughts on Northeastern and what makes them go.
I think the one thing that really stood out to me when I saw them play is that, I mean, you can feel the confidence when they're out there on the ice. It's palpable. It's something you can sense that regardless of what happens in the game, that it's something that, all right, we're here, we're in charge, we're going to do what we do best, and you're going to have to deal with it. It's really when you see a team playing like that, it's really impressive to watch. And I think a couple things that stand out to me, they're a big physical team, which I think when you're in a short tournament situation such as this, I think that can be an advantage depending on what kind of officiating you get. They're very deep, a lot of scoring. One thing that really stands out for me, Kevin Waugh, who's been probably their best player over the last 4 years, he's maybe seventh on the team in scoring. He got off to a really slow start and has heated up lately. But, when you're arguably their most talented player on the team is just kind of now getting to his peak level. They're a scary team, and that game against North Dakota is going to be very interesting to start things off.
What about North Dakota? Everyone's attention is drawn to that top line, and it's a very good one, maybe the best in the country. What do we think about with that program? I mean, it's a rough draw to get that. I mean, obviously you don't have a lot of control over that, but, That's quite a game to play the first game. I mean, to think that one of those teams is going to be out before 12 other teams have even tied their skates.
almost seems unfair, you know?
Yeah. Are we worried about North Dakota at all? I mean, they won the regular season. They lose a semifinal game against Minnesota Duluth team that is really played well over the last 2 months. They've figured themselves out, I guess, month and a half. Where do you see this one going, Kevin?
This is going to be a phenomenal game. I mean, you guys are absolutely spot on with it too. That you know, it is a shame that one of these teams is going to be going home before somebody else. The thing that stands out to me, I know everybody likes to talk about the top scoring line there for North Dakota, but defensively, I mean, that team has been solid all year long. I mean, they've had a few games here or there where, you know, they've given up bunches, but I mean, you kind of look down their recent games and there's an awful lot of ones up there. You know, if they can go into this game and, you know, Cam Johnson can either put up a shutout or, you know, one goal, this team will probably go. I know that, like I said, people focus on the offense, but if their defense is on, this team's probably unstoppable.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think over the years, we've been conditioned to kind of think of North Dakota as, well, they're this offensive juggernaut. They can score in bunches. And I think that top line can. And they've got a couple other guys, obviously, that aren't on the top line that can put in the puck in the net as well. But really, and this is no disrespect to Cam Johnson, who obviously has great numbers, but it starts with that defensive core. And, you know, all season long, you've heard from a lot of people saying that North Dakota's got the best six defensemen, the best over from top to bottom in the country. You know, BC fans might argue with that, but it starts with those six guys for North Dakota on defense. And I think even more so than the top line, that they're the ones that are going to dictate how the game against Northeastern plays out. And it's going to be an interesting matchup just because of Northeastern's depth. I mean, you can't take a shift off against them because they've got so many guys, so many dangerous guys.
Yeah, that to me is where this comes down to. I think you look at the six defense and how you can be consistent shift after shift for North Dakota, and then how Northeastern comes at you similarly from a forwards standpoint. So that's right there. Northeastern, six different guys with 10 or more goals, and then three others have 8 goals. So that's a pretty good illustration of how they spread things out a little bit. Ryan Ruck is the goalie. 912 save percentage, 226. Pretty good. Pretty good. So there's your first game. Then you transition to Notre Dame and Michigan. Everyone knows what Michigan is. I mean, there's no secrets there. Sometimes you wonder how a team will play or what to expect from them, and Michigan has displayed throughout that it's going to score a lot of goals, and it's got a goalie that is a liability. So there you are. James and Bus, I guess I'll let you guys take this away, as you guys are certainly most familiar with these two teams. Dowd, I guess start with the Wolverines.
I mean, for me, I think, you know, obviously you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's the same conversation we were having when we did the last podcast a few months ago about Michigan. Nothing's really changed there. It was, I guess, good from a fan's perspective or an observer's perspective to see them bounce back from a couple of rough games at the end of the year against Michigan State and Ohio State and kind of get back on the horse for the Big Ten tournament. But the same thing is those games against Ohio State and Michigan State, Michigan State, and then I guess Minnesota as well. You know, they just kind of have those off nights or those off moments, and even this championship game against Minnesota, and you know, after they jumped out to the 2-0 lead, they kind of let it get away from them for a minute, and you know, I guess we're able to jump back in. But it's just the inconsistency. You know, that there's no doubt that Connor and Comfer, you know, that line can score against just about anybody, and they've got some pretty good scoring depth and as well. But just with the defense and the goaltending, you know, it's really hard to predict what you'll get. You know, you know, Bus, I think, has watched a little more of Notre Dame than me, but that's always a kind of a tough rivalry matchup. And I think Notre Dame's got a decent transition game and can really put some pressure on Michigan's defense, which, you know, is maybe the opposite of North Dakota's and just not nearly as deep. So, it's, you know, if they come out and they can put 7 goals up and You know, they're going to be a tough team to beat, but, you know, against a, you know, really tough and deep defenses and teams that can stretch their defense out a little bit, it's going to be really difficult to tell what might happen here.
Boss?
Well, I think that this is a great matchup for Michigan because over the last probably month of the season, Notre Dame really struggled to score goals. Granted their last, their last three series of the season, they played at Providence, they played BU at home, they played Northeastern at home in the first round of the playoffs. So, some good teams, but they lost all but one of those games. They were 1-5 in their last six, and really, whereas during about the middle. The middle 6 weeks of the season, they were really Notre Dame was really rolling offensively and moving the puck well, defense and forwards. And Cal Peterson was in goal, playing as good as he has in his career at Notre Dame. They were looking real sharp, but then all of a sudden, the puck movement wasn't quite as crisp. The opportunities dried up, and then the guys that you would expect to carry the scoring load for Notre Dame, guys like Sam Hare, Mario Lucia, Anders Bjork, and right on down the line, they weren't factors anymore. And it's really been puzzling last month or so for Notre Dame. So.
But what better cure for that than kind of spotty defense and unpredictable goaltending, right?
Well, yeah, it's kind of funny. We talked about the first game being strength versus strength. Well, this one's kind of going to be weakness versus weakness.
Yeah.
So, you know, a team that spotty defense against a team that's really struggled to score. So it's kind of funny. I think if you flip Cam Peterson over to Michigan, you probably have a final or a Frozen Four team.
But I
just think Michigan is probably too dangerous for Notre Dame, unless Peterson turns in one of those efforts where he, makes 40 some saves.
Yeah. Notre Dame's got to stay out of the penalty box too. I mean, 5-on-4 with Kyle Connor out there is just
right.
As close to unstoppable as they'll come. So, got to play a clean game. They've got to take advantage of the chances when Michigan gives it to them. I think it'll be interesting, but you're probably right. I think there's too much firepower there and for Michigan. But just having watched them, I have just a few just terrible lapses in the last, 4 or 6 weeks of the season. It's hard, really hard to know what to expect.
Well, I think maybe another saving grace for Notre Dame outside of Peterson might be the fact that when Notre Dame was playing really well from like Thanksgiving to mid-February, they were so good at being patient with the puck and keeping possession of the puck, not just firing a shot from the point. If nothing was there, they'd throw in the corner, start the cycle, hanging on to the puck. If they couldn't break out of the neutral zone, they'd retreat back to the defensive zone, start over again. When they were really clicking with puck possession, they were at their best. Now, if they can recapture that against Michigan and keep the puck away from them, well, then they've got a better chance, obviously.
Yeah.
Keep going. I'm working on a little math here.
All right. Well, needless to say, whichever weakness is less weak, or whatever happens here, I think either one of these teams is going to have a really difficult time against the winner of that Northeastern North Dakota game. I think with both of those teams having a little bit of scoring depth and things like that, you look at North Dakota and their defense being strong. Michigan does have some scoring depth, but when every time they're out there, they're going to be up against, it's going to be a lot harder to match up lines and things like that. So, I got to think this is kind of playing for the right to lose to the winner of the first game.
Yeah, it sure seems like that.
Definitely agree on that one too.
And for as good as Michigan has been, you know, you look at them on paper, you know, obviously they've got the gaudy scoring numbers and they've got a great record. They really have been inconsistent.
Oh yeah. No doubt.
And it's a one game deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's your math.
Okay.
Notre Dame versus teams that did not make the NCAA tournament field, 16-2-1.
Yep.
Against tournament teams 3-8-6.
I've got that note right in front of me. I almost brought it up.
Why didn't you say it?
Oh, I didn't know what you were working on.
We didn't know you were working on that math.
Well, there it is.
But you know what? That says, you know, that's how you make the NCAA tournament. Beat the teams you're supposed to beat.
Yep.
And, you know, win.
You look at it, to me, with college football, you know, like, yep. Well, we went 9-3. We went to a bowl game and whatever happened. Well, there's a lot of times that's what you are. You're at that level. You know, we're a top 25 team. We're not a top 10 team, but that's what happens. So,
right.
Not Notre Dame football, just generic.
And Notre Dame's a top. Yeah. I mean, hockey-wise, they're a top 15 team.
Yeah.
That's what they were this year.
Yeah. How do you know?
But that's really a tough region.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got to think that Notre Dame is fourth most likely to make the Frozen out of that group.
Right.
And then I can't separate really any of the other three to rate them, which is most likely.
Careful with that, Gladdy. They might make a t-shirt out of you.
Yep.
What about Omaha?
Then I think it's then there's Omaha.
Then there's Omaha. That's sorry.
Hey, anything I can do to fuel the Nebraska economy.
There you go. Fracking, do they have that down there?
Probably.
All right, let's move to the next group here. The second Friday Saturday bunch, which is Minnesota Duluth versus Providence and Harvard versus Boston College. I guess Duluth Providence to start with. Let's get into that Providence goal, that overtime goal against Lowell.
Why don't you get into that?
Okay.
I think your feelings on that are probably more crystallized than mine.
Yeah, I didn't like it. And I reacted with some texts and things to people who were at the rink and watching on TV. First of all, and I didn't do a lot of follow-up reading on this, if it was covered in any way, even. But to me, the whole thing breaks down if we're going to value, as replay generally does, what's the call on the ice? Start there and then work from replay. And to me, even the fact that it was reviewed was a little troubling, because it was washed out immediately by the ref who was, you know, closest to the play. It was visible in the TV shot, emphatically waving it off. I don't know if the trail official was signaling goal, maybe off camera. I don't know that. But how do you review a play that didn't happen?
Right.
Was really where I started with that. And, you know, for the length of review, how long it took to get through it, they obviously looked at it so much. And if it takes that many times to look at it, it just by the very nature of that, it's inconclusive. If you got to look at it 30 times to make up your mind, you haven't made up your mind.
Has there been any word about exactly what they were, you know, what they were looking at, or what went into consideration there? That was.
I didn't get an explanation. I didn't really seek it out either. There's so much going on and. You know, it was a semifinal game, so but by the time the other hockey things had happened,
right, and it was at that point it was less. I mean, from what Gladdy was saying, It was less about the outcome and more about the process, I think.
Yeah, there was that part of it. And, you know, let's be honest, it was the third overtime of a 1-1 game
Yeah,
with another game to follow.
I
If
think
it
there
was
was.
a mercy rule, I appreciate it. Like, thank you for letting us get to see that second game. But I don't feel good about that. And I wonder, you know, we'll get to this at the end, I suppose, but with the wealth of information that's out there about teams' standings and being in the tournament or not in the tournament, and the fact that people have, unfortunately, in many cases, defaulted to the conference tournaments don't matter, it's just the selection show and the pairwise. If that was a team like Cornell or Michigan Tech or Northeastern or Minnesota Duluth, who needed to get some wins to get into that tournament, I wonder if that's just in the back of people's minds. I don't know. So that was a thing that I wasn't crazy about. But Providence is your defending national champions. Minnesota Duluth is hard to play against. Of all the teams I've seen this year, that's a team that just can frustrate the opponent, I think. I saw it against North Dakota on back-to-back nights recently. You saw it against St. Cloud on back-to-back nights recently. Even the semifinal game, you know, and championship game this weekend. What they've really done and bought into a tenacious, annoying style of play. They've got an unbelievable goaltender, and then, you know, you pop a goal from a Toninato or somebody like that, and then soon, you know, pretty soon it's game over, 2-1, Minnesota Duluth. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of goals scored in that game.
No.
I'm thinking 1-0 might do it. If not, 2-0 or 2-1. 2-0 empty netter, how about that? So
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
there you got that. Then you got Harvard and BC. They've played.
I was gonna throw in there that Minnesota Duluth, one thing that another thing that stands out about them is how just how speedy they are. In addition to being a tough to play against, they've got some real quickness. I just think that I think Providence's depth is a little better. And obviously they've got that experience. And I was going to say in a game like that, and I don't know how true it is in hockey. Maybe it's more of a basketball thing or something like that, but you know, when it looks like a coin flip, you usually give the edge to the team that has the best player, and I think that's probably Providence with Jankowski. He's probably going to be probably the best player out there.
I don't know. I think Kaskisuo was the best player in that game.
Well,
And
yeah, that's.
he's the most important guy. So that's what I would say on that. No question who the best player in the Harvard BC game is. That's Jimmy Vesey. Harvard, you know, I covered ECAC hockey for Inch primarily, you know, along with everybody else, for 10 years. No team had a more staggering performance in the NCAA tournament than Harvard. Year after year, you know, it was, this is it, this is the group, this is the guys, and then just total meltdowns. Now, does the fact that, you know, Tyler Kolarik and Dove Grimet-Morris and Noah Welch and Ryan Lannon did something in 2006 and 2007 have any impact on this group of Harvard Crimson? Absolutely not. But this is a team that, for all of its, you know, reputation, and I hate to talk about it in those terms, has never really been the tournament performer, whether it's Beanpot tournament, whether it's ECAC tournament, and certainly national tournament. That's something that hangs with them. And on the other side, you've got maybe the best tournament team of the last 15 years in college hockey. when it comes to those big games and big moments in Boston College.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, one thing that, you know, I saw Harvard, it was a while ago. This is way back in November. And what really stood out to me was, boy, that top line's really good.
Yeah.
And kind of the other lines sort of hang on, you know, don't lose it for us.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. Not a lot of depth.
No, but in what I remember, you know, my other flashback is to last year's NCAA tournament when they played Omaha, and were not good at all.
Yeah.
In that game, I mean, they laid an egg, basically.
That's what I was trying to gently say.
Well,
preamble.
Yeah. But yeah, this just doesn't seem like a good matchup for them, you know. Not just Boston College having superior depth, you know, better goalie, better tournament experience, but they're also, you know, playing at a site that's been very kind to them over the years in Worcester. So, I think Boston College has just got too much for Harvard to handle.
Yeah, there it is.
Sounds about right to me.
Kevin, who do you like out of that group? I guess we'll do that at the end, right?
Yeah, let's save that until the end.
Save that stuff.
Save that.
Yeah.
All right, Saturday regionals. Let's start in Albany. RIT versus Quinnipiac and Yale versus UMass Lowell. Yale's a funny team. I guess we'll start there. They lost at home. They really had a great season. Lost at home in the quarterfinal round to Dartmouth. And the reaction that came out of that from the Yale side and from head coach Keith Allaine was how incredibly happy he was about how his team played. And Dartmouth's goalie, both against Colgate and against Yale, was really spectacular, Charles Grant. But Keith Allaine's never happy about anything.
True that.
No.
So for him to like how they're playing, you know, this is, you know, every year there seems to be at least one or two, if not more, teams that kind of get bounced in their league tournament quarterfinals and then still make the tournament. Like you've got Yale and Notre Dame this year. But to me, Yale has that kind of mojo that you wonder how that time off and what they'll do. I think people are always, I certainly am, susceptible to falling in love with what you've seen most recently. And you say, oh, the league tournament, they just won, you know, in Lake Placid, or they just won in Detroit, or they just won in St. Paul, or whatever. And then you kind of make them the favorites to get to the Frozen Four because that's fresh in your mind. And I don't necessarily think that should always apply. And that's kind of where Yale finds itself in a pretty good group. Lowell, again, was in the Hockey East Championship game. And RIT came through and won the Atlantic Hockey Conference playoffs. So that's kind of what I think there. Quinnipiac is the number one overall seed. They're nasty to play against. They play with an edge. They've got some experience. They've got a lot of guys who have been in this tournament. And, you know, not too long ago, they were lined up against Yale for national championship. And those teams could play on Sunday in Albany. What do you think of Lowell, Bus?
They're one of those teams that I have a hard time getting a read on.
We'll talk about Denver in a minute.
I'd put them in that category.
Yeah.
They're such a strange team. I mean, they're really not that strange. I mean, they've got a great record, but I just, you know, they're good in every area. I don't know that they're great in any area.
It sounds like last year's Providence team.
Yeah, that's probably a good comparison, actually. You know, they got a fair number of experienced guys out there. Like obviously, an experienced goalie, Kevin Boyle, is a senior and has played well. You know, they're really tough. I haven't seen it. I've seen them in person. I've seen them on TV, obviously, a bunch of times. You know, they're really not a hard team to figure out, but they just, you know, what's their identity? I think their identity is they just do a lot of things really good, but you know, it's not like, oh, their power play is terrific. They're, you know, it's not one facet of their game that stands out to me. They're a well-coached team. That's what we've seen from them over the last 3 years, I think. You know, other than maybe the when they had Connor Hellebuck, you know, balanced top to bottom, smart players.
And pretty darn good defensively, though.
Yeah, I would say so.
Talk about getting a hire correct.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting matchup, I think, with Lowell and Yale.
Yeah.
Obviously with the goaltending.
Yeah.
And like you said, Yale last few games has, especially in that Dartmouth series, they just pumped a ton of shots on goal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's their thing. Can RIT win two games in Albany again?
Yeah, I was going to say they've done it before.
2010.
Yeah. But I would have said that in 2010 as well.
Yeah, I would say that.
Denver team was something that they beat. And that was, I think, one of the great choke jobs by Cornell to not come out of that region once RIT won. But they didn't even beat New Hampshire.
There was another pretty good one in Grand Rapids, right, Kevin?
I'm going to withhold all comments. Let's move along.
Yeah, that's the other one that comes to mind, that, isn't it?
Let's just move right along, please.
Miles Powell, Gabe Valenzuela, and Liam Cairns, RIT double-digit goal scorers. Powell with 15 goals, Valenzuela 13 goals, Cairns 13 goals.
Just looking at their goal totals for the year, that's tough to fathom that they're basically plus six on the year.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't really bode well, especially in that region. You know, you've got some teams that can get up and down the ice, but also some teams that are very stingy defensively. That's not a good sign if I'm an RIT fan.
Other thing to keep in mind for Quinnipiac is the uncertain status at the time of recording for Sam Annis. He took a big check from behind and left the game against Harvard in the first period, late in the first. It was a major penalty was called, and Quinnipiac actually scored twice on that five-minute major, which really was the difference in that game and won the conference title. So, you know, you take a team's best player off the ice, possibly. What does that do? I think Quinnipiac's depth, the fact that they've got some other guys out there, they'll be fine. And Gartig's really good. He might be he is the best goalie at that regional.
Is he?
Voters,
I think so. I have him over.
Would disagree.
I have him over Lyon, I think. I don't know. So, I don't know. But that can be sorted Sunday, when obviously it'll be RIT versus Lowell. So, because college hockey.
Exactly.
Exactly. Let's get to the last group here. We've got St. Cloud State versus Ferris State and Boston University versus Denver. So, you know, one side gets the history and legacy programs. The other side gets the, I don't say little guys, but...
canines.
Yeah. Dog-eat-dog world. St. Cloud State, to me... And Kevin, before we recorded the podcast, we went a little bit back and forth on this. To me, St. Cloud State hasn't been as good as they were when they won the North Star Tournament in St. Paul since that time. Their kind of running down the stretch was, you know, they got some points, they got some wins, but it wasn't...
It wasn't against the stiffest of opponents, no.
It wasn't it, you know. To me, that they didn't have the same, you know, it and flash. Like, there was times this year where you turn on St. Cloud State and you'd see their power play clicking, and you'd see guys like Bennick and Isamont and Kosala and just be kind of, whoa, look at this. They can really go. Resembling, you know, some of those kind of high-powered Boston College teams is kind of what I thought of. And then you'd... I didn't see that necessarily the last month of the season, and it's harder to do. Don't get me wrong. February is the hardest month to play hockey, I think, college hockey. But
I'd agree with that. But as you know, as you alluded to, I mean, we talked a little bit about it. You know, 8 of their games over the last 6 weeks were against teams that finished in the bottom half of their league. You know, and again, not saying anything that their league isn't good, because obviously it is. They've got half their teams in the field. But, you know, you kind of wonder when you're playing against the lower level teams in the conference on a given year, you know, do bad habits kind of start setting in? And I wonder if maybe that's a case there where, you know, some of the things that you were doing right earlier in the year, I remember – the last time we recorded a podcast here, Puck was talking about how sharp their power play was. Well, you know, is that same sharpness there? I don't know. I haven't seen them. I haven't seen them on TV recently enough to be able to say, but you know, that's definitely a team that, you know, had a good weekend last weekend and would, I'm sure, love to continue that momentum going through another weekend in Minnesota.
I think they really needed that tournament, like, you know, to say what I was talking about earlier about don't fall in love with the conference champions. I think they needed to beat Denver and to beat Minnesota Duluth to kind of get that mojo cranked up again, as it were. So I think that was an important step for that team. We talked about Northeastern with six guys who had double-figure goals.
Yeah.
10 St. Cloud guys have 10 or more goals.
That's very Michigan-esque.
Yeah. And then you got a defenseman, Ethan Prowl, who has 29 assists. So, not too shabby.
No, I think you make a great point, though, about them needing to win that tournament last weekend.
Yeah. And winning regular season titles, maybe this is where my kind of question marks about this team come in. You know, winning regular season titles is important, and we'll discuss what that means for tournament selection after we kind of get through this region. But, you know, for the lead that they had in that league, you know, the lights on at the end of the tunnel, and then to kind of just stagger home and North Dakota passed them and even Denver tied them in the standings, you know, that to me is an important deal that they didn't get that. And then that goes wide. Sorry to interrupt, Bus, but
no, that's,
but that goes back to the point about winning that tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it'll go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you know, those are, you've kind of alluded to the inconsistency of Denver and whatever, but to go out there and do it against Minnesota Duluth, a team that doesn't, as we talked about, doesn't like to let you play your own game and kind of likes to strangle people out and whatever, it's a pretty good sign heading into the tournament that, you know, they get their legs back under them, they start to feel themselves, you know, start to feel it a little bit more again. I don't know, I've got a good feeling about St. Cloud.
Yeah, last weekend of February, Duluth went to St. Cloud and won twice. And they were sluggish isn't the right word. Contested games over.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of flow.
which helps
Duluth and hurts St. Cloud. So.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, to bounce back and then show a month later that, you know, you're able to establish yourselves a little bit more against a team with a lot on the line. I think it's a good sign for them.
Yeah. And it wasn't any, you know, night off or backdoor kind of situation. Duluth at that time, when they took the ice, knew they had to win to get in.
Right.
Obviously, they ended up making the tournament anyway, but that's to play against a team with that kind of desperation and falling behind 1-0.
Yeah.
That's big for St. Cloud.
Well, I think the other thing too with St. Cloud is that I think more so than, you know, maybe North Dakota, had they land, I mean, it would have been nice for them to be in St. Paul, obviously, but I think it'll be, I think St. Cloud gets a bigger boost out of that, being in St. Paul. You know, that's where they won the North Star Cup, which I think they'll have a lot of fans there. It's a familiar place to them.
When they made the Frozen a couple years ago, they came out of St. Paul, didn't they?
Yes, yeah. I believe they did, yes.
So, yeah, that's a good building for them.
And they get a pretty good matchup in Ferris that, you know, I think Ferris will have a real tough, I mean, they're going to try to do what Duluth does.
Yeah.
To the nth degree and really, really slow it down. But I just don't think that they're going to be able to maintain that against this St. Cloud team.
And this isn't the Ferris State team that kind of made that magical run. You know, that team that made it to, that was Tampa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they had Blair Riley, you know, they had a good, solid, deep team all year long. They, you know, had, I guess, played well against the other best teams in the CCHA at the time. And it just, you could kind of feel it from early on in that year. I mean, I remember even Bob Daniels saying that early on in this year. And I just don't get that same feeling from this Ferris State team, you know. Obviously, it's one day and one game, but, you know, just past performance and that past trip to the Frozen Four, I guess, doesn't say to me that, you know, this is a serious upset candidate here.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's just a matter. I think RIT has a better chance of beating Quinnipiac than Ferris has of beating St. Cloud.
I think that's fair.
And I don't think it's a high percentage for RIT. No. That's not what I'm saying, but it's better chance. So that's that. All right, last game on our docket is BU in Denver. We kind of joked a little bit earlier about Denver being a who-knows-what-you're-going-to-get kind of group. And even more so than North Dakota, you talk about a one-line team. Bus, what do you think about this Denver team?
Pacific Rim line.
Yeah. I made a great Twitter joke on that, and I got no love. So I'm going to rerun it here.
All right.
If the Pacific Rim line is minus for a shift, does it become the San Andreas all your fault line?
Wow. I like it. All right.
So there you go. Okay.
I like it a lot.
Proceed.
Inches back.
We back.
That's very good. We are back. We back. They kind of fall in the I don't know, you can take a little column A from North Dakota as far as being really kind of a one-line team. And a little column B from UMass Lowell as far as, you know, not having a – it's hard to put a finger on what they do well. They do a lot of things pretty good, but nothing that really knocks you off your feet. You know, they're like we said about some other teams, they're a top 12th team in the country. That's about an apt description of them. And I've watched them a lot, and you know, they've I think they've got a pretty good goalie in Tanner Gillette, and you know, those kind of bounce, they kind of flip flop between the two goalies over the course of the season, Gillette and Cowley, and it seems like at least kind of toward the last later portion of the year, they went with Gillette, who's a solid college goalie. You know, I think it basically boils, they're kind of a Michigan Light, or actually a North Dakota Light, in that if you can stop the Pacific Rim line, you can really control them. And I think BU is the kind of team that can maybe do that. But I think they probably got superior depth compared to Denver, and yeah, I don't think it's a great matchup for Denver in that regard.
BU's maybe four of their five or so best players are seniors. I think that says something.
Yeah.
You look at Oxen and you look at Daniel Regan. I think it can be important at this time of year. So.
Right.
And you know, they were in the title game last year. You know, and you had Eichel and you had all that star power and you had, you know, kind of the it team, you know, all throughout the year. Everyone expected that they'd be in that title game in Boston, and you know, that was the team to watch, and obviously didn't go their way against Providence in that final, but they've been through it. So I think, when was Denver's last Frozen?
The last one they won. 06? Columbus?
06 was
Peter Menino.
05.
05 and 04?
Yeah.
They haven't been to the Frozen since 05?
That's correct.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Well, there you go. Wow. So, that's that.
I mean, BU is a. I saw them. I guess it's about a month ago, not even 3 weeks ago, when they were at Notre Dame, and they're a really talented team.
Yeah.
It kind of got a bit. The strange thing about them is they kind of got a bit of a gap between, like as you mentioned, all those seniors, and then the other guys are mostly sophomores and freshmen.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a gap between there, they're extremely talented. You got McAvoy out there. You've got Brandon Hickey's a really good player. They're a good team. I think they've just got a little too much for Denver though.
Yeah, three Boston University defensemen have 20 or more points. So that's pretty good balance right there. And a threat. So yeah, that's what we got.
Also, I should mention that Jordan Greenway is a flipping monster.
As a freshman?
Yeah. I mean, he's listed at 6'5", and I don't know what they list his weight at. I guess I can pop it up here quick.
I got it right here. They got
6'5", 230.
Yeah, he's like
a North Country boy.
Yeah, he is.
Canton, New York.
Yeah, he's like Buffalo Light.
And he's a Wilds draft pick.
He is a Wilds draft pick.
As is Alex Tuck from Central New York. Wow. Wilds, get out of my neighborhood, Wilds. I don't like you. So, which guy is should have most played for St. Lawrence? The guy from Canton, New York, or the guy whose name was Appleton?
Good question.
Anyway, that was another Twitter joke. Jared DeMike got some love on that.
Nice.
Legend, RIT legend. Now on the St. Lawrence staff.
Speaking of RIT, 2010.
Yes. Yeah. Good deal. Okay. Let's get to some more global discussions, and Kevin will start with a discussion point about maybe those teams who didn't make it in, specifically that Minnesota, Robert Morris, Minnesota State, and Michigan Tech all won or shared their conference's regular season championships and did not make this tournament field.
Yeah, no, we've talked about the importance of respecting the trophies that you guys win, because you know, you may not get another opportunity, but in some of these instances, obviously Minnesota, a couple games over 500, that's not a resume worthy of an NCAA tournament team. But you know, you look at a team like Michigan Tech or Robert Morris, the two schools that did not play a regular season non-conference game at home. They had to go on the road for everything that they had. You know, had outstanding seasons, unfortunately didn't win their conference tournament, and they're sitting at home this weekend. That's a bit of a shame to me. And I know that the way that the current selection format is, that, you know, the committee has its hands tied by a certain mathematical formula here, but you know, the human element in that looks at it and says these teams had tremendous seasons, and you know, you lost a game too early. It shouldn't mean that your season's over. You know, I have a real difficult time kind of reconciling that you know, you lost that last game, and yeah, thanks for playing, guys.
Yeah, I have a hard time particularly with Tech on that. I mean, you know, we kind of talked about Fair State and how they're not, you know, not that team that made the run a couple of years ago. And I mean, it's just Michigan Tech had some success against Ferris earlier in the year, and then I think they were like a 3-1 or something like that in the regular season, and then just to have a one goal loss, and I don't know, it's really tough to swallow for you know, the turnaround that Michigan Tech's gone through the last few years. They're really starting to, you know, to be a good team that's competitive, even when they, you know, when they start to play teams from the other, you know, bigger conferences and things like that. That was probably the most disappointing one for me.
It's always been an issue that I've had. Is what Kevin alluded to, the lack of the human element in it. And I understand that people, you know, there may have been a time in the past where prior to, you know, punching data in a computer and it's spitting out a list, where, you know, maybe there were some backroom deals made, or, you know, that's kind of what we've always been told as far as why they have the system they do now. But I also think that there needs to be some leeway, or at least you have to build in the opportunity for a committee, which, you know, obviously, I mean, if they're doing their job, they're up on the game. They know what's happening around the nation. They know everybody's resume. There's got to be a chance to say, hey, you know, let's compare these two teams, based on their season results, what they've accomplished, and that type of thing. And I think just to put it in solely in the hands of the computer, I don't think that's fair. Whereas other people will argue, well, that's completely fair, because it's, you know, it, there's nothing arbitrary about it. Well, there kind of is.
There definitely is, because the way that the system works, it places a greater emphasis on your non-conference games than it does on your conference schedule. Right. And your conference schedule will not change from year to year unless there's a major upheaval again, like there was a couple of years back. Your conference schedule or your non-conference games, I mean, those are set sometimes, you know, several years in advance, and you have zero control over how good or how bad somebody may be. And you shouldn't get penalized for a game locked in 2-3 years ago, and you know, maybe then they had players leaving early, coaching changes or whatever have you, and now all of a sudden that team that was a top 25 team, now all of a sudden they're, you know, trailing in the bottom of their league. That to me is you know, like I said, I keep looking at Tech, and they've got the 8th best winning percentage in the country this year, and they're sitting at home.
23
wins. 23 wins, yeah. And that's – and again, like I said, you know, nobody is going up to play at Michigan Tech. Their only quote-unquote home games were the GLI. And, you know, otherwise they're having to go on the road every single time. And again, how is that even remotely fair when, you know, you can't get any of these teams to come up to your place and play? It just bothers me, and I know it's the way that the system works, but you can't tell me that there's not a better way.
December 4th and 5th, home games in the league against Alaska Anchorage for Michigan Tech.
There it is.
They lost 3-2 both nights.
There it is.
So I get the whole point of it, and you know, I'm never too sympathetic to people who are on the outside of a tournament selection, whether it's by committee or by pairwise, because I'll look at it and say, win more.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that just am a cruel, miserable, angry person, but that to me is part of it. You do control your own destiny. The element, though, Kevin, that you bring up is the performance of other teams in your conference outside of conference.
Yeah.
Is what you don't control. And you look at that with all of these teams. So, you know, if, say, Army was better, does that help Robert Morris? Or if Bowling Green was better, does that help Minnesota State and Michigan Tech? So that, to me, is kind of out of your control. But at the same time, just win. I don't know. And the other thing is, if you step back, and we'll look at these teams. Gophers, Robert Morris, Minnesota State, and Michigan Tech, those four. Who would you knock, take out of the tournament to put them in?
Duluth.
Looking up, well, I was going to say either Duluth or the next one up would be Notre Dame.
I don't think any of those four teams is better than Minnesota Duluth.
We'll never know, will we?
Maybe they should go to Dayton on Wednesday night and play.
That's a great idea. Let's do that.
there's an element to that, and it's hard to win your regular season. I mean, the fact that you do that and don't make it is a little bit it's concerning, I suppose. But
I mean, the only way you get around that, if you're going to keep the auto bid for the tournament, is expanding it.
I'm pretty sure that conferences have the opportunity to choose which champion gets their automatic qualifier. And there was a time when if you won your regular season, you got in. There was an AQ.
Yep.
So, and that was when there was a 12-team tournament, too. So you'd have potentially 8 AQs. Rarely happened that way, but it was a possibility. Hmm. There was 4 leagues back then, too, which is another conversation. But so that's out there. What else did we want to get to?
I want to add that you said just win, but Michigan Tech won more than all but 7 teams.
Yeah,
that's that. That's there. So.
And I can't. And you know, what happened at when they got swept by Anchorage at home? I mean, they have guys out with injury.
Well, they were in Alaska the week before. Against Alaska regular. You know, thumbs up, Ocho. You lose 1-0 in the final to Ferris. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't see this. I didn't see that game, but
semifinal.
That was a semifinal.
Oh, semifinal.
Yeah,
I was going to say I didn't see any of the Ferris Minnesota State final, but that game had to be that had to be a tough watch, I think.
So much so that you opted not to.
Yeah, well, I wasn't home, but
I opted not to.
Minnesota State had one shot on goal.
So
I think Ferris likes to get a lead and then grind it out.
Well, we've got the Gophers on our minds. Let's talk a little bit about the Big Ten, not the fact that it's a conference and people need to get over that, but the member schools. Coaching change at Wisconsin was announced last week, and as usual, discussion around the head coach position at Minnesota. Let's start with the Badgers. Some good stuff throughout the season, and Todd Molesky did a great job breaking down some of the milestones that have been hit along the way in terms of attendance, in terms of points. Kind of did a little bit of a deeper dive piece a few weeks back. What were your takeaways from that? Guys, anybody, I guess?
I mean, it's, at this point, it's just unrecognizable, you know, compared to when I started getting into, started to work at Inch and, being a little bit younger than that as a student at Michigan and watching the CCHA, you know, Wisconsin was kind of a foreign thing, but, you know, they always had, some big names and some good teams. And then, once I got into Inch and started to pay more attention to them and, always a tough team, always, you know, pretty entertaining thing to watch. And then just the last few years, it's been absolutely unbearable. And I can't, I can't put my finger on exactly what went on there, but I don't know, very tough to watch. Yeah, I think about from that time, the team with my guy Brendan Smith and how, exciting, how well they moved the puck, how, they could score on anybody. They were never out of a game, and now it's kind of the opposite.
The biggest takeaway for me was the turnover in assistant coaches in that program over the last 6 to 8 years. That it says a lot to coaching staffs that have continuity, and a program culture, I think, is even more so what it speaks to. When you look at Union, whose head coach leaves to go to Providence, they promote the assistant and win a national championship. You look at North Dakota, whose head coach leaves to go to the Philadelphia Flyers, and they seemingly haven't missed a beat. So to me, that reveals something missing there, and I think that to me was the strongest element of the story.
Well, not only the assistant coaches part of it, but I mean, they had a hard time keeping quality players there. You look down their season scoring list here, and there's an awful lot of freshmen and sophomores at the top of that list. It's hard to, I don't care where you're at, it's hard to build a program where freshmen and sophomores are leading the way. And, if you're not keeping assistant coaches and you're not keeping players around, you're going to struggle. I mean, that's just the nature of the game there. And you look at, you mentioned the Union teams. The Union team that won the national title, that was senior heavy.
And that was another thing that came out of that Wisconsin story, was that they're kind of on that pendulum swinging back and forth with very senior-laden groups, and they kind of needed to even out their classes a little bit. And that takes several recruiting cycles, not one.
Yeah.
In fact, if you get that one great recruiting class, it might hurt it even more because you'd have earlier departures. But
exactly. Well, and that's, I think that's one of the biggest biggest criticisms of Mike Eaves is that, you know, he had those recruiting classes that were, I think there were a couple of them in a row there, maybe with Stepan and McDonough and guys like that, that were just laden with talent. And as a coach, you got to recognize that, okay, there's a chance that these guys are gonna be gone a year too early, and have some contingency plan in place if and when that happens. And clearly there was no plan in place, and we're seeing the fallout from not adequately addressing that. And I think I mentioned this on another podcast, but when George Gwozdecky first got to Denver, that was a big problem they had. Mm-hmm. Was that they had one class with a ton of seniors, and then the next year they'd have three or four. So every other year you're losing, 1 year you're losing nine guys, the next year you're losing two. Mm-hmm. I think it took them about, 6 years or so to finally balance that out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tough thing to do. So
Colgate and St. Lawrence have had that over the last dozen or so years, maybe longer. But to their credit, when they've had those teams, similar to that Ferris State team we talked about earlier in 2012, they've been in the tournament. They've made that count, So that's an interesting thing. Gophers, they seem to be popular to talk about. You mentioned the roster bust before we started recording, and news today that Hudson Fashing signed an NHL deal with the Buffalo Sabres, so he won't be back, but they got a lot coming back, and they didn't rely on seniors to do much this past year.
No, they didn't. In fact, they got a total of 1 point, I think. You got one assist from a senior this year. Hmm. And a total of, as I look at the stats here, 29 total games played. So, yeah. Fashing is a big loss, obviously, because he's a big kid, great goal scorer, great hands. And improved tremendously from his sophomore year to his junior year. But yeah, they bring everybody back, and they're going to be a tough team next year, I think. I think you really saw some of their freshmen, especially toward the end of the year, guys like Tyler Sheehy, Novak. Obviously, Shearhorn was good all year, but I think you saw some of those freshmen start to make a jump and sort of figure out college hockey a little bit, and I think that's obviously why they played so much better down the stretch. And naturally, they bring in some talent next year too. So, they're set up for a good spot, and I'm sure some fans out there, Gopher fans, are wondering, will they be in an even better situation if they hired a new coach? But, as we've said, who are you going to get that's better? I think in the situation that Minnesota's in right now, Don Lucia is the guy for them.
I agree with that. I find I'm not a very, very close follower, but there are some of the program, like entire athletic department things that are happening up there.
Yeah.
Can't help.
No.
Why do you make that change when you've got an athletic director who was recently dismissed, a football coaching situation, basketball just terrible, women's hockey won the national championship, but I think throwing more into that than needs to be, like, what's your net gain? There's not much more to gain.
Well, and I think too, Yeah, it's kind of a throwing the baby out with the bathwater scenario. But, and I know that there's an expectation for Minnesota hockey to be at this certain level. But when you look at this team that they had this year and how young it was, and if you can look at them and say, were they better in game 36 or 37 than they were in game 3 or 4? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no question that they were better.
There you go.
And I think the biggest thing for me with them was just inconsistency. There were times, kind of in the midway point that you're referencing, we're talking about the beginning of the year. You looked at them, the midpoint of the year. I thought there were nights where they looked really good. They looked like they, were starting to come together and gel. And then, they'll lose to Bemidji and Michigan, Minnesota State, sorry. And then, they play a good game against Michigan one night, lose a game the other night, and you even saw the championship game, Big Ten championship game, was kind of a microcosm of that. They started out not looking great. They played a fantastic second period, and then it kind of got away from them. Made a couple penalties, and Michigan's power play is not one you can just let out there. I think that there's a lot of promise there, and they're obviously the odds-on favorite to win the Big Ten next year. I mean, assuming Connor's gone, and as much as we talk about Steve Racine being inconsistent, at least there's some experience there, and Justin Selman and Nieves at Michigan. So, Michigan's losing. They've still got a lot coming back, but they're losing, quite a bit here. And then who else in that league scares you? I mean, Penn State. I gotta see it to believe it, I guess. That they can be there and hang in all year in a year where it's not getting handed to them like it was by Michigan and Minnesota this year.
Bus, you're plugged in a little bit better to the Minnesota area than all the rest of us are. How much of those expectations are sort of amplified by the fact that your last few college hockey champions have all been sort of those non-traditional programs? I mean, is that part of where a lot of this is coming from as far as the drumbeat to make a change? I mean, is that where you think this is, or?
They're in the
No.
national championship game 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I agree, but
I know.
they're not looking at it from that sense. They're looking at it like, well, we're a better program than Providence and Union and Yale. We should be winning these titles, and sort of not giving the other programs the credit that they're due, I guess.
Well, I think there might be a little bit of that, but I think I think ultimately people have to realize that not to take anything away from any NCAA champion, but I mean, college hockey, the national championship is really a 4-game crapshoot. I mean, where you talk about as crazy as NCAA basketball has been this season, I mean, that's really every year in college hockey. When do we ever have, all ones and twos in the tournament? So I think there's got to be some realization that's part of it. But also, it's just that it's in Minnesota hockey's in such a weird place right now. The fans are unhappy about the Big Ten. Well, that's it's the
That
way it
is the
is.
biggest pile of baloney.
Well, it is. I mean, that's but what are you going to do? You just got to move on. And I think there's some part of it too that, ask Gladdy as a Braves fan what he thought about Bobby Cox. I mean, I think Gladdy's probably more rational that, here's a guy that piloted a team to unprecedented, NL East titles.
You see, that's why you just revealed why I'm such a fan of the regular season championship.
Exactly.
I don't want to get into that too much, but you brought up the Big Ten thing, and I read an article that just drove me absolutely bananas. Maybe the rational thing wasn't there for about 24 hours. about the attendance changing, and they went to a sports bar and interviewed like three fans about Gopher hockey and what it's missing and everything. And you guys might have seen it. I thought it was just awful. A couple points I wanted to make about that. Number one, I did some research. I looked around a little bit. Couldn't find an answer definitively, but I don't think tickets, you know, that North Star Cup that Minnesota hosts at St. Paul, I don't think tickets for that are included with Gopher hockey season tickets at Mariucci.
No, they're not.
They're not. Okay. If you are a Minnesota fan complaining about the WCHA and how great things were, and you're not going to those games in St. Paul, you're a hypocrite of the highest order, first of all. Second of all, you talk about every weekend, Minnesota fan, like you had Denver and North Dakota there for 20 games a year. You had Omaha. You had CC. You had Alaska Anchorage. You know, you had Minnesota State. You had Bemidji at different times. So what's the difference between that and Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan State coming in? And Minnesota, Wisconsin was this great thing for such a long time, and maybe it's just the state of the program, but you're not losing as much as you think because you still got those games against the Badgers. You still have the non-league games and opportunities to see Duluth or St. Cloud or whoever come in. So if it's really just about North Dakota and Denver, then I don't want to hear it. So, soapbox, done.
Well, and it's not about Denver, really. I mean,
those were big games because of standings more than rivalry.
Right. I mean, when I was at Denver and we went to Minnesota, it was just another day, you know, yeah. For the most part.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I can't buy in a lot of that stuff that I hear, so. That's
right.
Where I wanted to be with that.
Well, and it's, I mean, that's how do you solve that problem? You
make
can't.
Make people smarter? Yeah, I mean, what
it's,
do you do? So.
People have an objection to laundry.
Yeah, right. And we talked about this on the last podcast. Do you go to watch your team or do you go to watch the other team?
Exactly.
So, all right. And the attendance decline that they mentioned was a very small percentage. That was another part of the article.
Well, you know,
ticket sales and things, but
it's not the decline Wisconsin's seen. That's
no,
for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and let's also mention, specific to Minnesota, that a single game ticket for a reserved seat at Mariucci is $35.
That's too much, I think.
That's a lot.
That's
yeah.
Money.
That's a lot. That's, yeah.
Cornell's about 20, and you can get in for 15 or so, usually, for general admission.
Is the Big Ten Network and more games, you know, being on, I guess for Minnesota, you know, they always had
they had Fox Sports.
Fox Sports, but, you know. I mean, is that a bad thing? Is that keeping people out of the rink? HGTV and better coverage and stuff like that? I don't know. I'm just trying to think of...
Well, that's keeping everybody out of every rink for every sport.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, look at Yankee Stadium on a summer night. Look at, you know, any event. I just, that's the trend of sports attendance right now isn't what it used to be. So to use that as a measurable is, I think,
well no, I guess,
societal.
Well, yeah, but I guess I'm, in a way, I'm agreeing with you that the attendance decline isn't necessarily.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing too is, you know, when the Gophers when Gopher hockey was really the ticket in town, there was no Wild.
Yeah. Right.
Now that's the ticket in town.
That's
so.
A shame.
I don't know.
Yeah, that there probably is a bigger impact there than I've considered. So, all right, we did a little interactive element to this. Bus, did we get any questions in from the Twitter Nation?
Yeah, somebody asked if the college hockey calendar should be flipped. So you
play the championship in the fall and then play in the spring.
Yeah.
Get your AQs out of the way, and then you really know what you got to do with pairwise.
No, you play your conference games early. Have crown your championships in mid-January. Then play a stretch run of non-conference games.
Okay.
Thoughts?
My thought is strictly logistics-based. Can't work.
Yeah.
Because of each school's academic calendars, you know, reserving building dates in advance. And, you know, as Kevin mentioned earlier, you don't know what you're getting in non-league. So, say you play through that conference thing and we're a bubble team and we need to get these wins, but we're stuck with such and such team, you know, instead of the one we really want to play. I don't think it can work.
Right, it would be tough to pull off.
But various, I think
the different lengths of the conference season: Big Ten playing 20 games, ECAC and Hockey East playing 22. Out west, they're at what, 24? I mean, that's the other part of it too.
Is the answer to this question revisiting the selection criteria that once existed of last 20 games? Remember that?
Yeah. And I've always liked that. Last 15, last 20.
Northeastern would be your number one overall seed right now.
Well, no, it's not a, you know. I got you on that. But it was at least a consideration, whether it's, you know, 5% of your total resume or 60%. You know, you can't have those extremes, I don't think. But that might be the difference between a, you know, team that kind of snuck in being just okay down the stretch versus a team that really made a move. So, I don't know. That may be the answer to this question, is revisiting that.
I think that's a fair point. And I always like that in terms of, are you playing your best toward the end of the season?
Yeah. The teams that could hurt are the teams like Miami has been recently, Yale this year, in the fact that you lose that early round or quarterfinal round tournament at home, depending on how you staggered down or played up during the rest of the regular season, that's considered, you know. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't necessarily have a problem with that criteria. The argument against it, I suppose, is that if you're playing all those non-league games so early, they all count. And those holiday tournaments really count. So, I guess that's where that lives for me.
I don't know. I don't want to dive into that into the pool again because I'm going to get all riled up.
So, anything else?
And you want to bring up your North Dakota reference?
Yeah, I think so. That's what I was going to get to next here. Again, this is historical stuff, and we touched on it a little bit with Minnesota, I think. It was embedded in there somewhere. Michigan State basketball, even for the casual sports follower, is reputable, contender, almost perennially, national championship contender, has made 5 trips to the Final Four since its last championship, which was in the spring of 2000, which sounds to me an awful lot like North Dakota. Won the title in 2000, have made 8 trips to the Frozen since then, and I haven't got the ring. So is it a credit to the program and consistency and being in the mix year after year? Or is it, what do these teams need to do to finish the job?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Maybe they're two different questions.
One thing you have to take into account is that North Dakota has had three different coaches during that span. I mean, two. You can't really throw Brad Berry in there since this is his first year.
Yeah.
But, you know what, as you've said before, it's hard to win hockey games. It's hard to win games.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the Bobby Cox thing. I don't know. I think it's a shame that so much of the culture is based on, you know, who got that last win. You know, who won the Super Bowl? Well, your team was 9-7. So... That's just where we are in American sport across the landscape. So, to me, that gives a lot more credit to winning a you know, even sports that didn't have that element to it added it with NASCAR, you know, with golf, you know, we got playoffs. Like what? So I don't know. That's just out there. But there was a comparison that I thought of and. Kind of striking, just the congruence from a timeline standpoint of when this all happens. So,
yeah, I think it's an interesting point, but I don't know.
I think the more troubling thing for me, and Kevin, you mentioned this, is that once they get to the Frozen, they're losing Thursday.
Yeah. I jokingly kind of made reference that maybe the Fire Hackstall crowd had a point, but seriously, if you're getting to the Frozen Four that many times, your coach is clearly doing something right. But.
Yeah, and out of those eight trips, the only years they made the final were 2001 and 2005.
Yeah.
They lost to BC and Denver, and then six in a row, semifinals and out. So that's... That maybe is the more troubling point to me, but you know, as we've kind of said throughout this podcast, it's a one game deal. All right, let's dig into some predictions here. It's getting late, so I guess we have to do this. It's mandatory sports things. So, who wants to start it off? Let's go region by region. I'll do it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Northeastern, North Dakota, Notre Dame, Michigan. Dowd.
Northeastern.
Kevin.
I really want to say Northeastern, but I'll go North Dakota.
Bus.
Oh, boy. I'm going to go with North Dakota. Yeah, I'm going to go with North Dakota.
Here's the problem. The question should be who and why. And none of these teams I can have a good why for. That might be the case for all these regions. I'm going Northeastern. And my why is that, you know, contrary to what I said earlier about not falling in love with league champions, this hasn't been going on for 2 weeks.
It's been going on for months.
Since Christmas, so.
I think they expect to win.
Yeah, yeah, there's something about that.
That's the sense I got from, that's the sense I got when I saw them play in person, is that they expect to win.
There you go. All right.
I'm still sticking with North Dakota.
Yeah, yeah.
They seem to me to be the ultimate find a way.
I get that sense as well.
Experience, defense, yeah.
I do. I like their defense.
Pedigree.
There you go.
Any chance Notre Dame beats Michigan?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess so.
There's a chance.
Any chance Michigan scores 10 goals?
Yes.
Yes.
Any chance Michigan gives up 8?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, tune in, folks. You won't want to miss that one. Other Friday-Saturday region, Minnesota Duluth versus Providence, Harvard versus Boston College. Who and why, Dowd?
Wow. Got to think about this one.
Yeah, this is a rough one. Anybody have an answer ready to go?
Boston College.
Why?
I like the goaltending. I'd like the experience there. They know how to win. I think it's going to be two tough games to get out of there. I guess I'm having trouble deciding between Providence and Minnesota Duluth. I like Boston College over Harvard, and then. I like kind of their defense and goaltending. I like their experience in the tournament. And,
Kevin?
I'm going to take Providence, and you can just copy and paste everything what Dowd just said about Boston College and paste it onto Providence. They were there last year. They got the experience. They know how to win. This time the target's on their back, but it hasn't seemed to bother them all year. So I like Providence.
Bus.
I'm going to take Boston College. I just think that they've got the most depth of really of any team in the country. Worcester's just been a great place for them.
It's comfortable.
They're comfortable there. I think that's the best way.
Yeah, what we saw with St. Cloud and St. Paul. Yeah.
Yeah, I've having been to see Boston College in a regional at Worcester that they won comfortably, it's not even like it's a huge home ice advantage, but I don't know if it's just the fact that it's so close and, a real short.
Well, literally, it's, I think, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think basically every time it's been there the last 8 years, they've been there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's... It's comfortable. That's a good way to put it.
BC 2-3 in its last five games. Prior to that, 11-0-4. So that time of the year when Jerry York seems to get it going was definitely happening. A little bit less so maybe down the final stretch there, but.
Well, they bounced back from the loss against Vermont, though, and then I had kind things to say about Northeastern already, so I think it's explainable.
Yeah. The way I look at this, funny enough, best coach, Boston College, best goalie, Minnesota Duluth, best player, Harvard, and yet Providence might win. Man, oh man, I don't know if Duluth can score enough to beat Harvard or BC. They're going to keep those other teams down, though. I'm going to say Harvard just because is my reason. VC, some of those other forwards, I guess. And maybe just it changes the script. I don't have the analytics for it or any concrete data, but as you mentioned...
There has to be one of them, right?
As you mentioned that Yale, Union and Providence are our last three national champions, and the game before that, title game before that, featured Ferris State. So there's got to be one, and maybe it's Harvard. So I'll go with that. RIT, Quinnipiac, Yale, Lowell. Kevin.
Quinnipiac, too much everything.
You literally took the words out of my mouth.
So, Dowd seconds the motion?
Yeah, not even close.
Bus?
Yeah, to me, when I saw this one, when I saw this regional come out, It seemed to be the most cut and dried to me. And Quinnipiac really that matches up well with all of these teams.
Best in show, so to speak.
Yes.
Head-to-head this year, Quinnipiac versus Yale. Sorry, Lowell. You can send emails to Bus if you're angry with overlooking that. They only played twice, the home and home, you know, conference games. Quinnipiac won 3-0 at Yale in December, and on the last day of the regular season, Quinnipiac beat Yale 4-1 in home. So that's your head-to-head. Quinnipiac's losses this year: Cornell in the playoffs, 5-4, St. Lawrence in overtime on the road, home against BU, and that's it. So all that points to Quinnipiac, and I think they've got a little bit of unfinished business. A little concerned about missing Annis, but it didn't seem to affect them versus Harvard, so it's less of a concern for me. Intrigued by Yale, and intrigued to see if kicking goals into the net in overtime is allowed in the NCAA tournament for Lowell.
But it wasn't a kicking motion.
Okay.
Just saying.
I'll go Quinnipiac because of Gartig. I think he's – I really like him. So that's that. St. Paul, Ferris State versus St. Cloud State, BU versus Denver. Who and why, Dowd?
St. Cloud for similar reasons to Quinnipiac. I just think that, you know, they're playing well. They've got depth. They know how to score. They know how to defend. And I just don't know that any of these other teams – match up that well to them. I think it's a really comfortable opening round win, and then you know, that allows them to kind of rest up and watch you know, what should be a pretty competitive second game and game plan for that, and
for Sunday night
take it easily.
Kevin?
Wow, man, Dowd, you and me same wavelength here. Yeah, same thing. I saw this one and figured this would be the easiest regional. St. Cloud will, like you said, it shouldn't have any major issue on their first game. And then, as you said, you know, watch two teams kind of slug it out for 60 plus minutes and await the winner. I think St. Cloud's got it.
Bus?
Ditto, St. Cloud. I just think that they're, I think a game between St. Cloud and BU might be interesting.
Yeah, I like that game.
Because I think talent-wise, they'd be, you know, about the same. I think maybe St. Cloud would have an edge in goal. But I think that for St. Cloud, that their power play is just so lethal. You know, they're clicking along at about 30%. Which is absurd, but yeah, I just think that they're you know, I know that Ferris State's going to want to slow them down. They're going to figure out a way to score against Ferris, and you know, I think they do come in with a lot of confidence following last weekend. You know, that was a nice showing for them. I think they needed that little boost.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. As stated before, I'm also going to say St. Cloud out of this bunch. The attributes of the Huskies are such that they're noteworthy. To me, this is as much a story, though, of I can't find a why for any of the other teams.
Yeah.
The closest I can come is BU's experience.
I also think Bob Motzko is probably the best coach out there.
Yeah, there's something to be said there. So, all right, that's where we are. Deterioration time.
Gladdy, I got I'll throw out the trivia question that I gave to you before we started. Bus and
yeah.
Dowd did not hear this, but when's the last time all four beanpot schools made the NCAA tournament?
I'm going to say like...
I'm going to say you're wrong.
Never? Ever?
Yeah. It's never happened. From what I can tell, it's...
I was going to say like 1988 or something.
Yeah, closest one I found was like a 93-94, but BC didn't make it that year. And that's been it.
And there you go.
I just saw this story come across Twitter. It's from ESPNW, which is, as you know, basically the women's sports outlet of ESPN. And the headline is, Minnesota women's hockey team received men's Frozen Four hats after winning national title.
I did see that as well.
Oops. That is a problem.
It's a small oops. And by small, I mean very, very large.
Yeah.
We've all been in the media business in some capacity. Stuff like that is staggering to me. Like,
yeah, it really is.
I don't know. You guys probably wanted to reach through your computer screens and punch me in the face when I would copy edit a lot of the stuff for Inch, because I'm such a nag about things, but I guess that's why you do it that way. That's that.
And there's tweets that say it's insulting and BS and what. I mean, come on.
I mean, insulting, I get it, but I mean, this is just like stupid. like Laddie's saying, like, do your job.
Right.
It's a mistake. It's not something that was done intentionally.
Right.
And, you know, that's okay. Somebody screwed up on a proofreading. It wasn't meant with any malicious intent to slight the women's championship.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're looking that hard for things to be offended about, you're going to be offended awful, awful lot of the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You can look at it the other way and realize that after the NCAA corrects their mistake and sends you the real hat, you will have a collector's item.
Yeah.
There you go. I think that'll do it.
There's no late scores tonight.
No late scores to update. No more feedback on the old Twitters. No more deterioration than we really had already.
So just out of curiosity, I Googled, spelling mistakes and whatever on championship hats. Apparently in 2007, when West Virginia won the NIT, they misspelled West Virginia, V-I-R-G-I-N-A.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Missing the last I. So it happens.
I saw a USA Today headline.
Vikings botched stadium worker gifts and misspell Minnesota on winter hats. It happened.
Good one.
Yeah, only one N.
I saw a photo flipping through some things the other day. There was a mine in Turkey. And there was a collapse or something in many injured and fatalities, and the headline was hundreds dead in Turkey mine disaster. And I said, why were they mining for turkeys in the first place?
I didn't know that's where they came from.
Yeah. Who knew?
Do you need your late score update?
Yeah, let's see what we got for late scores.
From the NIT second round at halftime, San Diego State leads Washington 45-29.
It's men's basketball NIT.
Yes.
Good one.
All right.
All right.
Well, we needed a score, so.
Yeah, we got a score update in there. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. No promises as to whether, if or when we might do this again. But if you're heading to regionals this weekend, have a blast. If you're going to try and catch 12 games on the old color television, enjoy that as well, and internet streaming devices. thanks for letting us take up some of your time. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon, hopefully. Adios.